just after 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and that must mean it's time again for Money Management with Opus 111 Group's Mike Mayo. Here's Mike.
Good morning. Welcome to the latest installment of Money Management. We are your antidote to conventional wisdom. My name is Mike Mayo. I'm with the Opus 111 Group, and we're all set for another hour of financial news, recap on what's been going on in the economic world, and most importantly, how all that can affect you. Well, net-net, it was a pretty good week for the markets. Some changes going on, which we'll talk about here during the hour. I want to talk about, we'll give you some kind of tidbits from the markets and economic reports. We'll talk about the debt ceiling, hopefully for the last time, and also some interesting things, at least to me anyway, about the difference between what folks are saying and what they're doing with regard to the markets and the economy, which I hope you'll find interesting. Now, yesterday, the Dow ended the week at 33,426. The S&P was last traded at 4,191. The NASDAQ ended the week at 12,657. Russell 2000 at 1773. Gold settled at 1976 an ounce. Silver at $23.82 an ounce. Crude at $71.55 a barrel. The 10-year Treasury at 3.69%. And soft white wheat was last quoted at $7.30 a bushel. Now, coming up this next week, we're going to be getting an existing home sales report on Tuesday. Wednesday, we get the Fed release of the minutes from its last meeting and hopefully get some insights into what they're thinking about interest rates. Thursday, we get the last revision of the first quarter GDP figures. And finally, Friday, we'll get the data on personal income and spending for last month. So those are the just the facts, Jack stuff. Now, I come up with these little bits and pieces I find during the week. I just want to throw them out to you because I think they have some, well, relevance and some interest. Last Tuesday, Home Depot dropped 5%. That was $13 a share, even before the market opened. And that's worth about 100 points down on the Dow, and it takes something out of the S&P as well. And the reason that it did that is that it's in the Dow is what's called price weighted. So the more expensive your shares are, the more effect you have on the index. And the Home Depot is, I believe, the most expensive stock in the Dow right now. So it has almost double the weight of Walmart, since it's almost double the price. But, you know, Walmart's a much bigger company, so it's a little skewed in that regard, and you kind of got to keep that in mind when you're looking at how did the quote-unquote market do. You know, what are we referring to? Take a look and see which stocks may have had the biggest moves during the day, and if that may have had an oversized effect on the net result. Now, Microsoft this week got the Europeans okay to do their Activision deal. The stock closed at a 52-week high. It closed yesterday at $318, which was just a few cents off the 52-week high. And Apple, all by itself, is bigger than the entire Russell 2000 index. So I talked last week about the size of Apple. It's pretty significant in terms of the marketplace. Now, this week, we had 52-week highs in a few things. The housing sector ETF, the NASDAQ, the tech sector ETF, semiconductor ETF, NVIDIA. NVIDIA is involved with this AI stuff. And housing, tech, and semis, basically leading things higher. And that's a surprise to most people, I believe, because the received wisdom is that we're in a bad market. Well, I'm hopefully I'll try to disabuse you of some of that today. Now, it's true that the markets haven't been doing much, that is to say, in terms of movement and direction. According to S&P Dow Jones, until this past Wednesday, 25 of the S&P's preceding 30 trading days had moves of less than 1%. That's like no meaningful figure. And what's been really interesting is how basically lethargic, how lazy the market has been, especially with all this interest rate hiking, pause, talk, and debt ceiling, and, you know, oh, yeah, those regional banks going kaput. Yeah, you heard anything more about those banks going kaput? No. I guess maybe it wasn't that much of a story after all. And so in any case, you know, that's what's been going on. And so that's just not much action one way or the other. It closed within 1% of 4130 through 29 of the last 32 days. So not much going on. Lowest volume since August on last Monday. So, you know, the traders, they're like, well, I'm not sure. I don't know. So that's what drives the market on a short-term basis is the folks who do short-term trading. And if they're not motivated to do it, we're not going to see much movement. And speaking of those banks, Pacific West, that was one of the banks that was mentioned in this initial, announcement about banks, quote-unquote, in trouble. Well, they're still around, and they were up 3%, I guess it was Thursday. They've actually ridden, they were up more than 28% the first 4 days of the week after being down 21% the week before. And the reason was is because they're still taking in significant deposits. So, as I've said, see, the thing with these banks is they're all insured to $250,000 per account. So where you have your money in that regard, if it says it's FDIC insured, small bank's as good as a big bank. So don't be moving just because it's a bigger bank. It doesn't necessarily offer you additional benefits. Now, Thursday, the S&P closed at a nine-month high. What's that? I didn't know that the market was up. Yeah, well, that's kind of the perception. And as I said, there hasn't been much going on in the market overall. And if you're only watching the politics, you'd think the traders have been just buying and selling like crazy people, but not the case. You know, this is a different environment than what we had last year because the Fed finally seems to be making some headway against inflation. Interest rates may have peaked. I don't know. We'll see. And the unemployment rate continues at a 54-year low. So the S&P still is down 11% from its January 22 all-time high. Kelly Cox pointed out that the S&P has been more than 10% below its all-time high for almost a year. So this is one of the longest such streaks on record. Very unusual. But again, this uncertainty that is pervasive in the marketplace is what I believe has kept that streak going, if you will. You know, because when Fed started raising interest rates last year, it kind of threw a wrench into that rally. All those superstar stocks of the COVID years got smooshed. Zoom, Peloton, Facebook, all of those guys. They had done very well on zero interest rates and really strong, massive government support. But when the interest rates started going higher, well, the numbers all changed, and suddenly the value shares were cool again. You know, the S&P, as I said, is trading at its highest levels of the year, but Fairlead Strategies, Katie Stockton, she's an analyst there, is looking for two more closes above 41.55. Now, yesterday it closed at 41.91, so she wants it to close above 41.55 next Friday because she believes then that the index will move meaningfully higher after that. You know, and as I've said twice now, the S&P and the NASDAQ trading at their highest levels of the year. There's big gaps between what the individuals are saying about the economy and their own experience compared to what the data say. Bill Merz, who is at U.S. Bank Wealth Management, said, and I'm quoting, "I think it's reflective of the uncertainty that investors feel around what will happen on the policy front. How will the economy respond? Will consumers be able to continue spending through this period, and how long can it last?" Bank America survey found growing pessimism from investors. And again, to me, this is kind of flying in the face of logic. But nonetheless, according to the survey, money managers have their bond allocations at the highest in 14 years. And nearly two-thirds of those folks expect the economy to get weaker. One encouraging thing, though, is that most respondents affect the quote-unquote soft landing. And by the way, if anytime you miss something on our broadcast, we do turn this into a podcast and put it on our website, opus111group.com. And you can go there. Well, for this report will probably be on Wednesday. All the others are already there, and they're in commercial free format, so you can pick up on anything you might have missed or want to hear again. So, you know, we've got a mere $31 trillion in national debt. Now, for reference, in 2011, it was $15 trillion. So interest payments on our debt, though, believe it or not, are lower today than in the 1980s or 90s. And even though the size of the debt is up a bunch, we can still afford to pay it. Why is that? Well, quite frankly, because while the amount of debt was lower back then, interest rates were a bunch higher and the economy was smaller. So the GDP, for example, in 2011 was $15 trillion. Today it's $26 trillion. So what you can deduce from that, the federal debt grows as the economy grows. So what about your portfolio? Does this debt ceiling stuff really matter? Well, it depends on your time horizon. You know, you can't look at your retirement account as just one chunk of money. You know, you're going to need money at different times for different things. So it's for nearer term things, you got to be a lot more conservative than for the longer term issues. But for example, if you're looking at just the next 6 months, a market fluctuation could be a swing factor in the market's direction between now and year end. And if your time frame is multi-year, you can relax and know that instances in which we've approached the debt ceiling are today just footnotes in market history. Remember, we've done this 89 times since 1959. So I defy you to go back and look at one of those mountain charts of the market and say, yeah, that was one of those days when they did the debt ceiling stuff. No. So just focus on what you can control. You have no control. I know it's hard for folks to get over this, but you have no control over politics, tax policy, the economy, and the sequence of market returns. But you can set your goals, maintain your asset allocation strategy, no matter what, and work to keep your emotions under control about investing. So I believe to be a successful long-term investor, you must be patient. And that means that periodically, you have to be prepared to outlast some market-related suffering. In order to survive in the market, you have to tune out the noise, look away from the madness of financial headlines. But you making the right boring decisions can make a world of positive difference in your results over the long run. Even if the economy did slip into a recession, keep in mind that many of the metrics are at historically strong levels now. In other words, a recession could mean the economy goes from being very strong to being less very strong, with limited risk of the bottom falling out thanks to what continues to be a lot of excess demand in the economy. And that would turn into one of those what they like to call soft landing. For now, I don't be worried about the debt ceiling debate. Put your fingers in your ears. The stock market doesn't seem to be worried, as you can see by what's been going on these last couple of weeks. I don't believe you should be either. Another explanation is that the market well understands that all of this risk is mostly, all of this talk is mostly for show. And it seems to me that if we are really in trouble, the market would definitely be letting us know, because it is a forward-looking instrument. So that's what I think about the debt ceiling stuff. Regarding the economy, we did, as I suggested, we've got some good news out here. The U.S. economic activity rose in May, highest point in 13 months. This in spite of rising interest rates and high inflation ahead of this deadline that is, you know, it reminds me of Y2K. You know, all that hooting and hollering about, you know, the world's going to end and your computers are going to turn backwards and all that stuff. Well, this might be a little more dramatic than what this is all about, but It certainly is dominating the news, isn't it? So, S&P Global surveys of purchasing managers shows economic gains were led by service-providing businesses. That makes sense. Now, U.S. new home sales, highest level in just over a year in April. It means buyers are moving toward new construction while the stock of existing homes for sale is still pretty low. And last month, the Commerce Department said sales of new single-family homes at the fastest pace since March of 2022. And the good news is, relatively, the median sales price fell 8% from a year before. Now, Charlie Bellello, my boy, the chart man, had some data along these lines that I think are interesting. 3 years ago, the 30-year mortgage rate was 3.2%. The median existing home price was $284,000. That's in the whole country. Today, the 30-year mortgage is about 6.39%, median home price $389,000. So that's another 100 grand-ish. So the result is you need a $21,000 increase in the down payment, assuming 20% down, and a 97% increase in your monthly payment, up from $987 to $1,944. One of the reasons we're having, shall we say, a slow turnover in the real estate market. Now, in a non-related area, new orders for durable goods, things meant to last more than 3 years, cars, airplanes, computers, stuff like that, rose 1.1% in April, and that beat the consensus for a decline. And that increase in orders was due to primarily to defense aircraft. That jumped up 5.5% in April. Now, the U.S. economy, this was reported, I think, Thursday, grew more than previously thought in the first quarter. That came from the Commerce Department. The GDP from January through March was up 1.3%, which was above the first estimate and ahead of what was expected. It was led by gains in the private sector wages and salaries, so Americans' income and spending both rose in April. And so that's good news. And, yes, our friends at the Fed, they released their meeting minutes last Wednesday from their previous meeting, and it suggested that, I don't think this is a surprise, the central bank leaders were uncertain how to proceed with their rate hiking campaign. They were divided at this last meeting over just where to go with interest rates. Some said we need more increases. Others say a slowdown in growth is needed to tighten further. And although the decision to increase the Fed's benchmark by 0.25% was unanimous, the meeting's summary reflected disagreement over what the next move should be. And they're thinking with a tilt toward a less aggressive policy. So, now, if you look at inflation, at the CPI, it's been declining 12 straight months. That's never happened before in history. See, you have this lag effect. You know, the inflation was caused by all the money that came out during COVID, you know, for one thing or another, all the money that was put out for various and sundry. And it's just working its way back through the system. And we've got a lot of money with not a lot of stuff to buy, which was the case when it when the money was first being made available, you get inflation. And inflation is not a quick switch. You don't turn it on quickly. You don't turn it off quickly. So one of the reasons it's still dragging through there is because, as I've alluded to earlier, it's like a pig in a python. It takes a while for it to go through there. And so inflation is slowing significantly, but not quickly. And we're also seeing, you know, prices drop, fertilizer prices down, unfortunately for our local folks, corn and wheat at local lowest levels since 21. But if you're a fan of omelets, wholesale egg prices down 85% from their peak earlier this year is probably a good thing. You know, I've never been, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I've never been involved in a situation where people were talking about a recession like a preview of coming attractions for multiple months. I mean, it usually just kind of showed up and the market, the economy was slowing down and okay, there you are. But no, it still hasn't showed up. You know, it remains well, as they say, at bay, defying sharp rate hikes. Unemployment stays low. Consumers resilient. And I think that's due in a great measure to the fact that there's a lot of folks working and they still have relatively strong balance sheets. I mean, individually, that is. You know, the consent, according to Stephen, what's his name, Stanley, chief U.S. economist at Banco de Santander, said, and I'm quoting, the consensus forecast for at least a year running has been that we're 3 months away from a recession, and it just keeps getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. Yes, it does. Now, Torsten Sloke, he's chief economist at Apollo Global Management, Torsten said, and I'm quoting him, the consensus expects a recession starting next quarter, but the upside risk to that negative forecast is that consumers still have plenty of savings left. To wit, San Francisco Federal Reserve researchers estimate consumers are still collectively sitting on $500 billion, with a B, in excess savings. Now, I'd be happy to sit on some of yours if you don't mind, but in any case, the extra cash folks have piled up since February 2020. And it's, as I was saying earlier about inflation, that this money is still, to a great extent, out there. And, you know, and then, shoot, over this last, what, couple months, we've been talking about how the economy appears to be resurgent after being sluggish in February and March. And, you know, what about the inverted yield curve, you know, the year-long slump in leading economic indicators and the consensus of economists who all say the economy is headed for a recession? How can growth be surging in that circumstance? Well, the latest round of Fed tightening has occurred in the wake of a massive and unprecedented increase in what's known as the M2 money supply. That's all the money that's in the system. But that has been significantly reversed. The big jump, the $6 trillion jump in M2 as a result of the COVID and what have you, was responsible for the inflation surge. But again, that money, that mere $500 billion that's sitting out there, it gives people some cushion, gives them the ability to, you know, continue to buy or spend, as the case may be. And so that's helping to help support the economy as well. And while many forecasters, of course, still see a recession starting in the coming months, nobody's going to be so bold as to nail it any more closely than that. All except the fact that demand for labor, as we said, has been very robust, and consumer and business finances have been very strong. How do you have a recession in that kind of circumstance? I don't know. I do not know. But, you know, here's the thing, and kind of back to that portfolio question. If you for sure need money in less than a year, for, I mean, you know, a chunk of money for something of significance, a car, a trip, who knows what, but, you know, some definitive chunk of money, do not put that money in the stock market. I mean, you know, I'm nothing but a stock market guy, but no, it makes no sense. The short term, the downside risks are way outweigh any upside appreciation you could maybe squeeze out in that short amount of time. And you're going to be watching that money like a hawk. Are you going to sell? Are you going to buy? What are you going to do? You know, no. I mean, if it were in the market, to make sure you didn't lose it. And that downside could come from more debt ceiling drama, an actual recession, the Fed, inflation, who knows. But it could cause you travail, and you don't want to have that. Now, on average, over the last about 100 years or so, and I think I got it hidden away in here somewhere, but the stock market has been up about 75% of the time on a one-year basis. In other words, every year the market's been up 75% of the time. That's pretty good. I mean, if you were a baseball player, you'd make all the money in the world with that kind of hit rate. But on the other hand, as an investor, a 1 out of 4 chance to lose money is still way too risky when thinking about something as important as a house down payment or a new car or what have you. Now, segueing into the outlook, as I choose to call it, looking around this past week for folks, you know, what are their thoughts about the markets going forward? And in no particular order, Bank of America, Stephen Suttmeier. Stephen says, stocks continue climbing a wall of worry despite the recent rally higher in the market. He goes out to say, he's a technical research strategist, by the way. He goes on to say, sentiment, positioning, and cash levels suggest underexposed investors who are braced for Armageddon. Armageddon not being a good thing. If their greatest fears don't materialize or get pushed deeper into the future, he says this would increase the risk for catch-up rally phase. I think you're seeing a little bit of that in the last couple of days, as perhaps the traders are getting an inkling that, again, maybe the politicians will get out of each other's way and just say, okay, do what you need to do, get it done, and let's move on to more important things. But Mr. Suttmeier added that leveraged funds are being aggressively short. Money funds are near record highs, and he says that helps support his viewpoint. You add that current conditions mimic the wall of worry periods in recent history, including the Eurozone debt crisis in 2012. Well, Citibank upgraded U.S. stocks to neutral from underweight. They say a pause in Federal Reserve rate hikes becomes more likely, and the U.S. economy will fare better than expected. Their strategist, led by Dirk Willer, said that, and I'm quoting, with a recession not imminent yet, and the Fed in the very last innings of the hiking cycle, we think that U.S. stocks may well do better once the Fed actually does go on hold, in line with the pattern of the last 30-plus years. And while stock market strategists, yeah, they may be split over whether the S&P will end higher or lower by the end of the year, most of them do agree that earnings are headed higher, and profit margins are likely to trend near record high levels. You know, companies are selling around the world. It's not just here in the U.S. So they can have opportunities to, you know, make money in all kinds of different places. And please to remember that higher earnings tend to lead to higher share prices. Even Michael Wilson at Morgan Stanley, I mean, this guy is trying to make a living as the stop clock guy. You know, he's a bear no matter what's going on. But in any case, he says that even he says that 2024 could come with robust earnings growth, which he characterized as the next boom. Earnings drive stock prices. That's what I said. Anyhow. And so, you know, if you're not a 100% believer, start putting money in, you know, dollar cost average. Put so much into a position, a fund, a stock, whatever it is. And then in a pre-selected time or price, put in more so that you're not left at the gate if things do go up. And conversely, if it just stays there, well, then you'll be able to continue to get it at reasonable prices. You know, we've been trading in between on the S&P, 3,800 to 4,200 on the S&P back to the mid-November. And we've been kind of stuck there. Now, Katie Stockton, who works for Fairlead Strategies, she was looking for two more closes of the S&P above 4,155 as confirmation that the index is ready to move higher. Well, last Friday, the S&P ended at 4,191. And yesterday, it was 4,205. So I hope she got her signal. I'd like to spend the last segment going over just, I don't know, attitudes that I find that are quite puzzling to me about investing in general. And I'd like to hopefully give you some facts to make you feel better about being in a market, even when things aren't quite, smooth. You know, right now, we've got the S&P trading at the highest levels of the year. And yet, we have these big gaps between what people say about the economy and their own experience compared to what the data says. A survey by Bank of America found growing pessimism from investors. Now, their investors that they surveyed are like money manager folks. So they're running lots of money. According to their survey, money managers have their bond allocations at the highest in 14 years. Now, you don't put most of your money in bonds if you think there's any potential for upside, okay? And nearly two-thirds of those polled by Bank of America expect the economy to get weaker. Now, most of them expect a soft landing. Well, that's very nice. But they go on to say that thinking about actionable trades, many continue to see mega cap tech as the best area to be owning, followed by defensive issues. That said, several conversations have revealed a desire to be neutral into the X date, given the potential for markets to swing either direction upon seeing the outcome punctuation period. Well, mega cap tech, as we noted before, has benefited from lower interest rates, and so you're basically following something that may have already run its course, but we'll see. My buddy Sam Stovall, chief investment strategist at CFRA Research, he said, and I'm quoting, "Markets are stuck in neutral, even as news becomes more and more optimistic on the debt ceiling." He says, "I think we're in search of a catalyst either to break out or break down." I'd say Sam called that pretty well. And the Gallup folks have another survey that looks at satisfaction from a variety of factors relating to folks' personal lives. And they say that most people seem pretty satisfied with their own circumstances, but Americans as a whole are not nearly as optimistic. It's they call it, "I'm fine, but everything else seems to be terrible." And I have no idea why that is. But to me, it's just quite strange that most people do seem satisfied with their lives generally, but assume that everybody else must be miserable. Well, we live in a world where our negativity bias is constantly being reinforced. I don't think you have to think too hard about if that's true or not. And we haven't evolved to the point where we can handle all this bad news that we get on a regular basis. You know, before we had 24/7 news and social media and all that kind of stuff, how could you be aware of all the things going on around the world, much less in the same city, that could be considered negative? I mean, it just wasn't there. And, you know, when you're talking about investing, I get this a lot of times. Say, "Well, I want to take a risk in the market. I want to, you know, gamble something in the market." That's one of my least favorite things, is to have the stock market described as a casino where the house always wins. Well, if you're making dumb bets, I don't care where you go, the house will win. But if you're a day trader, yeah, that's tough. I mean, you got to be right a whole lot of times to make money as a day trader. But in a casino, I mean, a real live casino, the longer you play, the higher your chances of walking away as a loser, because the house has the edge all the time. The stock market is the opposite of that. The longer you play, the higher your odds are of success in terms of experiencing positive returns. Now, what do you mean by that, Mike? You're talking like a crazy man. No, I'm not. Because even if bad stuff still occurs, the world is getting better every day. But most people assume it's getting worse. Part of the problem is that a lot of people default to thinking that there's more ways for things to go wrong than there are to go right. And again, let's look at the market. Now, the stock market, for the record, does go down from time to time, but most of the time it goes up. Since World War II, 1945, for you keeping score at home, there have been 13 bear markets. That works out to about one every 6 years. Bear market, theoretically, is something where the market drops 20% from a previous high. Now, in that same, going back to 1945, there have been, 4 times where it dropped 30% or more. That's about every 13 years. And 50% or more, which we had two of in the 2000s, had just occurred three times. And that's one about every 26 years. That's not too often, is it? You know, stock market returns are not average because, you know, these the end of the world things in the market are very infrequent. And it bothers me that people use the term crash so often. I mean, drop, go lower, whatever. Crash, you're talking 40 and 50%. And as I just said, you're talking, what, seven times over 70-some years? I wouldn't call that crashes. But here's the actual data. Since 1926, and 1926 is when they had good numbers, the stock market, U.S. stock market, has experienced positive returns 75% of the time on a yearly basis. In other words, if you put money in a year, 75% of the time you'd make money. 88% of the time if you invested it over 5 years, 95% on 10 years, and 100% you've made money over 20 years. That's good for retirees and long-term investors. Now, had you put $100, no, you couldn't because it wasn't in existence, but had you put $100 in the S&P in 1926, in 2023, it would be worth, let me look at all these commas, $1,173,722.24. That's about a 10.1% return per year. And it beat inflation with the adjusted return. If you adjust for inflation, it was around 7% a year. Am I going to guarantee that that's going to be the case in the future? Well, no. I'd like to. But as long as I've been doing this, things tend to work their way out in a positive manner. But betting on a crash sounds intelligent until you realize how tough it is the time of bear market and the fact that the stock market does go up most of the time. You know, it makes sense to prepare for downside risk in the market, but you don't know exactly when it's going to be, so you got to be really careful about that. You know, for investors, it takes discipline to stick with your investment strategy when the markets get volatile, and it takes literal courage to buy and or hold onto your long-term positions when short-term market timers are on the TV frothing about the mouth and, you know, pulling their hair out, yelling and screaming and saying sell. You know, the path to your long-term wealth accumulation, well, it's filled with uncertainty. It makes you feel uncomfortable about being in the market. And then there's also the risk events that can lead to dips in the value of the portfolio. But it's your discipline and courage that enable you to be successful meeting your long-term financial goals. Very simple, but hard at the same time. Now, I need to take a small commercial break. It has nothing to do with Opus or the markets. It has to do with Memorial Day. I'm a Marine. Always have been, always will be. And as a result, things like Memorial Day, Veterans Day, Armed Forces Day, they have special meaning. Armed Forces Day, that's for the guys that are on active duty now. Veterans Day is for anyone who wore the uniform. Memorial Day is for those folks who are still wearing the uniform. And for those of us who have been in that line of work, well, you have special memories of those kinds of folks. And I would simply ask that tomorrow, over this weekend, that while you're having fun and barbecuing and doing whatever else, you just take a minute and think about the kids that gave it up so that you'd have the ability to have a good time. So God bless them and all y'all folks too. So thank you very much for listening. This has been Money Management. I'm Mike Mayo with the Opus 111 Group. We'll be back next Saturday with more market news. I hope you'll be here too.
Join us again next Saturday morning at this same time for the financial insight, opinion, and perspective of Money Management with Opus 111's Mike Mayo. Have a question or comment? Email us at info@opus111group.com or visit our website, opus111group.com. Sections of this radio show contain forward-looking statements that are not guarantees of future performance. This information is from sources we believe to be reliable. However, we cannot guarantee that it is accurate or complete. These comments are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, nor as a recommendation to buy or sell any security or investment product mentioned in this show. Investing involves risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Individual circumstances do vary. Please consult an investment professional prior to making any investment decisions.